This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. All across Michigan this week, folks were working overtime to make sure that an election could happen during a pandemic. It was a team effort in Detroit. The city clerk's office got some help from the Secretary of State, making sure that Michigan's biggest city could count ballots, including thousands and thousands of absentee votes, which have to be prepared for tabulation by hand. By now, you may have seen clips of the Republicans who came to challenge the tabulation process. We wanted to talk to some people who were on site. Detroiter Kalia Gaston works in urban planning. She says she's always been a political junkie, and she's been in Michigan for 20 years, but for a variety of reasons, this is the first year she's ever volunteered to play a role in the process. She was an election observer for the Democratic Party. Kalia, hi. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
So you start your day at 9:30 at the TCF Center. For those who don't really know the place we're talking about, could you explain what it was like in there?
So, you know, TCF is the new name. This is formerly Cobo Arena Hall, where we have the auto show normally in Detroit. So you're walking into basically a convention center, gigantic space that have been retrofitted to really house the election workers, the observers, the challengers. And so walking into the room, there was over 100 tables of people who were sitting there socially distanced from one another as much as they could be, wearing masks, actually processing the absentee ballots.
Folks may or may not know that election observers and election challengers were on site from both Democratic and Republican sides all throughout the day. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about what the mood was like early on in the day, just as things were getting started after training?
Yeah, and so there's, as you said, there's challengers and observers, Republicans, Democrats, but then there's also those who are independent or neutral from, you know, ACLU, NAACP, other organizations. And so as observers, you're there to observe the processing and counting process to make sure rules are followed. Challengers have other abilities to actually challenge votes, but no one is supposed to harass or to speak to election workers directly or to touch ballots. So people who are working by law are supposed to be free, right, from intimidation or harassment as they're doing their job. And that was not the tenor of what happened yesterday. So I got there at 9:30. By 11 a.m., it had started to be really tense, where people were being harassed physically. So although the legislature did not pass the law requiring social distancing, you know, you approaching the table is something that you can do. However, you have to ask. And that's not what was occurring. Election workers were literally doing their work with people over their shoulders, close enough to touch them, leaning in some cases, binoculars to observe what they were doing. People were being asked while they were working if they were Democrats or Republican, which is against the law. People were videotaping and taking pictures of those who were working, which again is a violation. So once I started to see those things, I was like, oh wow, like this is what I'm trained to observe and to document. And so there is a protocol for alerting the supervisor at the table of what's happening. We followed that process, but then sometimes we did have to escalate it because people would not step back. They wouldn't wear their mask in some instances. And so eventually, probably not until around 4 or 5 o'clock did people actually start being removed. And I'm sure a lot of, people across the country saw You know, the doors that looked to be boarded up, they were not boarded up. They were cardboard up because, again, people were taking pictures, posting pictures of election workers on social media, which is a violation. And you could hear people banging on the windows and you could see the glass shaking. We also saw people climbing up on the windows, you know, thinking as though they weren't being let in because people were trying to hide something, but actually the room was full. So there were limits on the number of people who could be in the room due to coronavirus, and also the need to keep everything balanced. So if you have 100 Democrats, you want 100 Republicans and 100 independents observing and challenging. You know, when you see people behaving in that way and you've seen the things that have happened in Texas, you know, with the Biden campaign being ran off the road, you know, the stakes get heightened. And so we, you know, banded together, you know, people of all different races, ethnicities from all over the region to support one another. And there were a lot of tears shed, you know, but I was very proud to be there as a volunteer. But I was proud of Detroit. I was proud of, you know, the workers, many of them who are older, who sat for days, you know, over a 2 or 3 day period to ensure that democracy would really work.
As all this was playing out, you know, you're seeing the older poll workers who've been through this before. You're hearing the chants and banging coming from outside. And I understand there was also some chanting going on within the room too, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What was going through your mind?
Honestly, I was like, this is America, right? Like, this is where we are in 2020. You know, we talk a lot about other countries, about quote unquote developing countries, about you know, we've helped to ensure, right, elections in other parts of the world. And here we are in the United States of America, where the foundation of our country and democracy is being challenged. So when people were chanting, stop the vote, right, like that was a fever pitch moment where it's like, right, we claim that we want to, you know, ensure democracy. But here we're saying, stop the vote, stop the vote, stop the counting. People inside were chanting, you know, don't take my vote. And it's like, no one is taking your vote. You're here in Detroit, a city that you don't live in, challenging literally at some tables, every single vote, every single ballot people were challenging. Before ballots could even get to the table, challengers and observers in some instances were saying, I challenge all of the ballots, right? When you have our servicemen and women who risk their lives, and those were the last ballots to be counted, and those were the ballots that were being challenged the most. It's like, that's where it was last night. That was the reality. And that's where we are as a country. And so when we talk about democracy, when we talk about voting, right, like it occurred to me, I will do this every election. You have to defend the vote. Mm-hmm. And that's what a number of us learned last night. And people are committed that if we have to be in there 12, 15, 18, 26, 48 hours to defend our rights, especially as Black Americans. It's like, I don't want people to underestimate the racial component of this. You're talking about a city that's still almost 90% Black. You're talking about election workers that were at least 85% Black. And most of the GOP observers and challengers were majority white. And so you look at those optics of having white people harassed, berate, physically intimidate Black people, the optics of that are chilling. And at that point for me, you know, a number of us cried.
Kalia, I was going to ask you why you stayed, but I think you answered that straight away.
You know, I also stayed for my daughters. I have a 9-year-old and a 2-year-old. And, you know, my 9-year-old, she wanted to be there. Yeah. And so I want them to live in a country that lives up to the values that it proclaims. That's what I want for my girls. That's what I want for them. And yesterday was for them, for their mother to be on the front lines and to do something to help ensure that they get that opportunity. And I'll be out there again.
Thank you so much again for telling your story with us today.
No problem. Thank you.
That's Kalia Gaston, mother of two, urban planning consultant, and living in Detroit. You may recall we talked to Candace Fortman about her decision to go work at the polls. Fortman had a more official role in the process as a temp worker for the clerk's office. In her day job, she's the executive director of Outlier Media. Here's what she saw at TCF Center. Could you describe how many challengers you were working with?
Oh, there were quite a few challengers. And I would say that they really came in waves. So you would get a wave of Democratic challengers, and then you get a wave of GOP challengers, and maybe a wave of nonpartisan challengers coming in. But by and large, the largest group to come in sort of mass quantity at one time would be the GOP challengers. And, you know, you have to acknowledge the fact that most of the folks that were coming in as GOP challengers were white, and most of the poll workers who were counting absentee ballots were Black. And the optics of that was quite interesting to see.
Yeah. Something I think has been less discussed. You mentioned that there were also Democratic election challengers present. Do you have a sense of how many?
So I can say how many from yesterday, because we did a lot of counting yesterday. And so one of the counts I did, probably maybe around the afternoon, around 5 or 6 o'clock, we had somewhere around 220 odd GOP challengers in a room, and about 200 and maybe 7 Democratic challengers at that time, and maybe 75 nonpartisan challengers. The rules for the room stated that there should be 134 from each individual group. And so, of course, we had to end up balancing that out, which I think a lot of what you're seeing this morning, when you see, you know, challenger groups saying that they were not being allowed into the room, a lot of that was because there were already too many challengers in the room to begin with. And so the act of balancing out as people left and letting more people in to make sure that, one, we are abiding by fire code, but also it is critical to be reminded that we're in the middle of a pandemic. Making sure that there are not too many people in the room and that we're able to keep poll workers safe was job number one for us. And safety means not just making sure that they can do their job, but making sure that we were following the guidance of the Detroit Health Department.
How would you describe what the interactions were like with the challengers, both the Democratic and Republican and nonpartisan ones, all three varieties that were there?
Sure. Tuesday, we had maybe a few folks that were a little aggressive with our poll workers and were asked to leave the room by the Detroit Police Department. But that was a rare occurrence, really, on Tuesday. On Wednesday, when I went back, what I saw was an aggressive change in temperature and direct harassment of the poll workers. And that harassment really did come really connected to the folks that checked in as GOP challengers. And some folks, I, you know, believe were checking in as nonpartisans, but were trying to sort of go around that rule of not letting too many people from any one party in. So they came in under nonpartisan because we could let more nonpartisan folks in. I think that happened on both sides, quite honestly, because getting credentialed was not exactly difficult, but it was more aggressive and just really hard to watch. We had to do more policing of the floor and making sure that poll workers were safe and that they were getting the space they needed to be able to do their job. And all of this is happening, of course, while we still have people in the hallway banging on the windows to the room and chanting things like "stop the count." But to their great credit, the poll workers did not, in fact, ever stop counting.
Did you ever feel at any point, we spoke with a reporter who was covering this, and I'll ask the same question I asked him. Was there ever a point at which you thought that the folks on the outside who were banging on the windows and trying to get in, was there ever a point when you thought they might get into the room?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's an intimidation tactic and you tell your mind that, but I'm watching this crowd that is growing. I know what's happening on the outside of TCF at the same time. And your mind can't help but to wonder what would happen if DPD was not able to hold that door. It was scary for quite a while there, for sure.
Ultimately, the challenge crowd did dissipate outside. How long would you say it took that to happen?
Well, we had challengers there even when I left, and I left around 1 a.m. this morning. There were still challengers, and there were just a few. There were like a handful still there, but there were still people who were waiting to get in. And so the larger crowd, I mean, they were there the majority of the night. I mean, it might have started to wind down around 10 p.m., but the crowds, you know, were still there, and people were still checking in as challengers as late as 10 p.m. last night.
That's pretty late.
It's pretty late.
Did any of your experiences with all this change how you feel about the vote?
Oh, boy. What happened yesterday renewed my energy for protecting this thing that we call democracy. I think that so often it's a word we throw around and it's not actionable enough for us unless we're, you know, going to vote. It feels actionable on that day. But being able to work and being able to witness the incredible, incredible dedication of election workers. You know, yesterday they arrived at 5 a.m. Many of them did not leave that room until 4 a.m. this morning. They did not leave until every vote was counted. That is what democracy looks like. That is what civic dedication looks like. And I think what we have to focus on is how incredible it is that all of this turns because normal everyday residents step up to do the work. We have an elections office, but of course they could not pull it off without those folks who go to a training, who sign up for varying reasons, right? Like, we don't know why everybody is there, but we do know that they are there and they do their jobs. And it is why we are able to get our elections results with as little fuss as possible. And so I'm really grateful for our election workers. And I'm really, really hopeful that we have a renewed spirit for folks to sign up and to work on election day, because I think the more people we can get consistently doing the job who can then train the next generation of election workers, the stronger our departments will be.
Candace Fortman is the executive director of Outlier Media, and she was out there working the polls on election day. Candace, thank you so much for telling us about how it went.
No problem. It was a pleasure.